At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the inaugural episode of a podcast to be named later. This is definitely a Red Sox podcast, but
very creative name.
We don't have a name yet, so stay tuned for that. But I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe, and we're gonna talk some Sox here.
Gotta have it. Gotta talk some Sox. Yeah. A whole lot of stuff to talk about.
A ton. The Red Sox have been in the news a lot lately. Maybe a little bit more than I would have expected to start the offseason. What, we're like a week, 2 weeks into the offseason now, and there have been some big rumblings.
Yeah, I'm not getting my hope. Well, that's why I am getting my hopes up, but I feel like Yes. We've seen this each of the last however many years. They're the interest kings, and then when it comes down to actually like closing the deal on some of these players, they just are either not offering the right amount of years or offering too little money. That we saw last year with Seth Lugo, Teoscar Hernandez, any number of guys. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't want to get too hyped up, but it is hard not to. We'll get to all the big rumors later, but first we should probably start off with a 2024 season recap, which will be very quick because it was not notable pretty much at all.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those seasons. I said this on Red Sox Review all season that we're going to look back at the 2024 season and be like, what even happens that year? Like,
yeah.
Who was on the team? Like, did anything noticeable happen? Like, and the answer is no, nothing noticeable happens besides they hung around for a little bit. They didn't do enough at the deadline. Their big right-handed acquisition was Danny Jansen, and they quickly fell out of playoff contention by the time September rolled around.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think individually, a lot of players took steps forward, and that was the one thing you can really take away from this season. Jarren Duran, all-star season, all-star MVP season, will probably finish top 5 to 10 in MVP voting.
Yeah, I would imagine he's somewhere in the 5 to like 7 range,
yeah,
maybe, just
yeah,
off the complete blind guess.
Yeah,
but
so emerged as a key player this year. He showed signs of it in 2023, but this year playing almost every game, would have played every game. If, you know,
he didn't say a slur.
Yeah, yeah.
Minor misstep.
Yeah, just a tad. Other than that, I mean, Devers was consistent but injured.
So this is something that pissed me off for the duration of the season, that once Devers got hurt, it seemed like everybody came out of the woodwork to call him an albatross contract and wanted to move him to DH and this, that, and the other thing. He was on pace to have a career year and still finish with really good numbers when he was essentially playing with one arm for
right.
the last at least month and a half.
Right, and all those people who gave Devers so much shit for that too, I don't think they really know what they're talking about.
No.
Like, are you watching the games?
We're in, like, that's the thing. Like, everyone bitched and moaned for however many years. Oh, they didn't pay Mookie. They didn't pay Bogarts. They don't care. They're not keeping their homegrown talent around. And then they give Rafael Devers, who is, he's better than Bogarts. Obviously, he's not better than Mookie Betts, but he's younger than Mookie Betts, which I think is a key component in giving these type of mega deals to these guys. They give this guy the richest contract in Red Sox history, and nobody's happy.
Yeah.
So, like, there's no pleasing the people. The people that are going to be upset are going to be upset no matter what. They'd pick nits with Mookie Betts. They'd pick nits with Xander Bogarts or anyone else. Like, if they land Juan Soto, they're going to find a reason to hate Juan Soto. Like, these people, there's no pleasing.
Right. And the state of Red Sox Nation may be like the worst it's been in a while.
So toxic.
Yeah, every year it gets worse, and that's why this is a big offseason. And that kind of transitions well into our first quick hit talking point. We'll start off with Rob Refsnyder, who was a lefty killer. Kind of floated like, dude, I might retire this offseason. And then they accepted his option, so he's back for another year.
Yeah, I don't think anybody in the Red Sox organization took those retirement rumors any seriously.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
I did a lot of work on Red Sox Review, so I was listening to Alex Cora's press conferences pretty much every single game.
Yeah.
And when that first happened, they were like, they asked Cora, they were like, oh, what do you think about Rob saying he might retire? He's like, oh, yeah, we were making fun of him in the dugout before the game. Like, oh, yeah, you're going to retire? Yeah, fucking right, dude. Like, mm-hmm. And like, I think it was just a ploy to get the team to pick up the option because he likes it here and didn't want to go anywhere else. But, like, also what it was a – I'm trying to look it up right. Yeah, $2.1 million club option for 2025 for your fourth outfielder who absolutely mashes lefties and is a great, like – great, great clubhouse guy. Everybody loves him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's probably going to get into coaching when he's done. So, like, he floated that to be like, oh, please pick it up, like, or else I'm going to retire. And they were like, buddy, we were already picking it up. So, like, no need to worry about that.
Right. And that's a guy who really is a spark off your bench, who, like you said, is a leader and also one of few right-handed batters in this lineup.
Yeah. And I do think, like, for the most part, that the lefty thing is overblown, and I'm sure we're going to get into that with Juan Soto because for some reason there are people on Twitter being like, oh, he's a lefty, you can't sign him. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, well, he had like an over 900 OPS against lefties next year, or last year. It doesn't even matter if he is also a left-handed hitter, but you do want some sort of balance because we've seen with Tristan Casas, we've seen with Willie Abreu that Cora is not necessarily willing to throw these left-handed batters into the fire against left-handed pitchers in their first season. So there is going to need to be a guy that can come off the bench and mash lefties when guys like Roman Anthony come up.
Mm-hmm. All good points there. I think we can transition to our next point here, which is Nick Pivetta got a qualifying offer. Tyler O'Neill did not. And initially you're kind of looking at this and you're like, $21 million for one more year of Nick Pivetta seems like kind of absurd, especially looking at his numbers. He's basically been a 4-5 guy his whole career, and you're going to pay or potentially pay him $21 million a year. To me, that just didn't make a whole lot of sense, and I think you agree with this too.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something that me and Joe, I know I've told you this before, me and Joe Weil had this conversation so many times down the stretch on Red Sox Review because when the team fell out of contention and weren't playing meaningful games anymore and we had to fill an hour, sometimes 2 hours of radio talking about this team, we got into this conversation a lot. And the consensus from both of us was, let's give Tyler O'Neill that QO. At the end of the day, there's a chance that given his injury history, he wants to go out and find something that might be less AAV but more secure in case he gets injured again and he's locked in. And at the end of the day, if that's the case, you gave up Nick Robertson and Victor Santos and you're getting the second round pick, which I always said that's good business to me. Giving up two guys you never heard of and you get a second round pick in return on top of getting a year of what he must have had close to 30 home runs.
Yeah.
30 home runs and like 42 RBIs because that's what he does. So I was pretty surprised to see Pivetta, like, even that last start that Pivetta had, he was emotional coming off the mound in his post-game presser. He was like, I just wanted to take it all in. Like, I love these fans. I love pitching here. Like, he seemed pretty resolved to the fact that that was his last start at Fenway Park.
Yeah.
And, again, 21 mil for a guy like Nick Pivetta seems like a lot. What really surprised me was if Pivetta, which I'm sure we'll get into it, but Jeff Passan said that he's likely to decline that qualifying offer. If he does accept that qualifying offer, we just assume that they're going to keep having – or they're going to add to this rotation. But where does the addition come from if you have Pivetta?
Right. And I'm with you there. I think another aspect of this, and Zach kind of alluded to it as well here, was Jeff Passan, he released an article a couple days ago kind of just overviewing some of the top free agents and where they could end up. I just have a quote here that I can read real quick. So he said – on Nick Pivetta, right-handed starter, he almost certainly won't accept the qualifying offer to return to Boston. At least a 3-year deal awaits Pivetta in free agency. Teams believe his stuff plays like a frontline starter, and whether it's the Cubs, Orioles, Braves, or others, Pivetta is looking at one of the biggest deals of the winter for a starter. Looking at his numbers, I don't know where this overvaluing of Nick Pivetta is coming from, but it seems like Craig Breslow kind of saw this coming. I don't know where the underlying stats are. I haven't taken a look at like his advanced statistics, but just looking at it on a surface level, his ERA has never been under 4. He has never had over 200 strikeouts in a season, and he's only made 30 starts 3 times. I just don't know where this value is coming from. And if teams are willing to shell out 3-year deals that are probably more AAV, or if not the same AAV than that $21 million qualifying offer, then Craig Breslow kind of made a good call here, because if he leaves, you get the conditional pick, and you don't have to pay Nick Pivetta $21 million a year. Whoever he goes to, I think, is just making a dumb financial decision, especially with this free agency starting pitching market. I feel like there are a lot of better guys that you may even be able to get cheaper.
Yeah, so if the QO wasn't attached to Pivetta, I think theoretically you could say that any number of those teams could go to Pivetta and say, hey, we like what you have. I just pulled up his Savant page. He's got 88th percentile K percentage,
okay,
80th percentile walk percentage, but also he's 10th percentile barrel percentage. He's middle of the pack hard hit rate, and he's middle of the pack chase and whiff percentage. So without the QO attached, you can say, like, okay, there are some projectable things. He has a high extension rate, which obviously correlates to how quickly the ball gets on the batter. But with the second round pick, so now you're talking about a guy, like you said, he's never pitched over 200 innings. He's only made 30 starts however many times. The ERA hasn't been below 4. You're going to give him 3 years, say, $60 million.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And give up a second round pick. Like, it's like I was saying with Tyler O'Neill. Like, if you're going to get a second round pick for Victor Santos and Nick Robertson, then like that's good business. I think it is incredibly poor business to then turn around and give a guy like Nick Pivetta that amount of money over that term and give up a second round pick.
Right. I agree with all those points too. It's going to be interesting to see if he accepts this, because Passan seems to think there's no way in hell he takes this qualifying offer. And I guess at the age he's at now, I think he's 30. I could be wrong on that, but he's around 30. Let's see.
31.
31. Okay, so this might be his real last or second to last shot to cash in. Probably his last shot to cash in. And he never really had a chance to cash in at all before. So
no, this is his first time hitting the open market.
Right, right. So he started with the Phillies. He wasn't great. He got traded here for Heath Hembree and Brandon Workman. And you got your value out of
him. He was a throw-in in that deal, too. Yeah. Connor Siebold was the real get there.
And he has to be a free agent. I know he was with the Rockies
for a
while.
Yeah, he was with the Rockies for a little bit. I like you said, I can't imagine he's still in the league.
Yeah, he was not good. So Nick Pivetta gave you at least, it was like 3 or 4 years, maybe even more than that. You got your value out of that trade
easily.
That
deal came at the 2019 deadline, I think it was.
Yeah, so like 5 years at this point of value there. And if you can get a second-round pick for him, which it seems like that's where it's trending, I'm pretty fine with that.
That's absolutely the best-case scenario to me. Like, and then your rotation, it seems like they're going to add a frontline starter, whether that be Garrett Crochet, whether that be going out and signing Max Fried, which is the route that I would prefer they take. I've been very vocal that I think they need to add two arms, not just one.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at Pivetta rejecting the qualifying offer, you have your addition, Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford, Brian Bello, and then Lucas Giolito, I guess. I know we're going to get into the Giolito conversation, but I suppose if Pivetta accepts that qualifying offer, then maybe you don't necessarily have to go out and get that second arm, but I would much rather go get, say, if you're going to get Garrett Crochet, pair him with a Nathan Eovaldi, who has the track record, or even if you want to shoot for the stars and pair Crochet with, say, Max Fried, who's a workhorse 200-inning guy.
Yeah, so we'll see on that. I think we can transition into the next point, which we kind of just have a list of free agents who we like. I will skip over the ones that Zach has for now, because I know he has a rant on Teoscar Hernandez, so stay tuned for that. But some of the guys I like in terms of starters are Sean Manaea. Late into the year, he kind of just changed his entire arm slot and became one of the most dominant pitchers for like the last probably third and playoffs last year. He looked really good. And Red Sox fans should remember him because in 2018, he was the one who threw a no-hitter in April against them in 2018. And basically after that, I mean, it was just full steam ahead. That was kind of interesting that, I don't know, I just have always kind of been into Sean Manaea. He's a lefty. I know Zach and I were talking earlier about how lefty-righty doesn't really matter in terms of starters, but I always think it's good to just have one, especially if you're in the playoffs and you can kind of game plan for that. We'll see. But the other one I like a lot is Shane Bieber, who will probably not play most, if not all, of this year. But we've seen in the past that the Red Sox have been into giving these sort of like two-year, basically one-year prove-it deal contracts. They've done it with James Paxton and also Liam Hendricks, and we'll see how that works out this year. But a similar deal for Shane Bieber, a former Cy Young winner, granted it was in 2020, is very interesting to me. I don't know if the Guardians are going to let him go, but they are the Guardians. They don't seem to retain many of their people if you're not named Jose Ramirez. So we'll see.
I think the interesting thing with Bieber, you mentioned a Paxton slash Hendricks type deal. What initially attracted those guys to the Red Sox was that they liked their training staff and they had faith in their ability to help them rehab from that Tommy John. And obviously we know Bieber has a relationship with other people in the Red Sox Twitter space. Mm-hmm. So could that, I find it hard to believe that a pitcher would choose his free agent destination based on his relationship with a personality.
Yeah.
But theoretically, I guess that could play a role. I mean, we saw David Price say that he was getting bunk beds.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I do like that point. I think he will probably be doing a lot of recruiting with various people.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to fire off those names that you had, and I know you have a rant on one of these guys.
Oh, yeah, I do. So my first two targets are frontline starters. I mentioned Nathan Eovaldi. He's actually not on this list, but I love Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah, he fills in there.
Literally up until the point of the trade deadline where he didn't move, I was saying, get Nathan Eovaldi. Mm-hmm. Get Nathan Eovaldi. He knows what it takes to pitch here. And I think that's an underrated aspect in all of this. Like, this isn't an easy place to pitch.
Yeah.
Especially if things aren't going well. And not only did Nate do it here for many, many years, like, people forget he was the loser in that 18-inning yes. World Series game. But he went out there and he ate it for the bullpen and he walked in the next day and said, I'm good to go the next day. So, like, this guy's a gamer. He knows what it takes. He has proven track record in the playoffs. It seems like all the injury stuff is behind him. He's not going to be your frontline starter at this age. But if you pair him with one of these next two guys, Max Fried and Blake Snell, all of a sudden it looks so much better. And it really catapults yourself into a conversation of we can compete for the AL East, we can compete for a playoff spot. So I'll start with Max Fried, obviously workhorse guy. He's going into his age 31 season. He can give you 200 innings, which the Red Sox have not had since Rick Porcello?
Pretty much.
Yeah, so you need a workhorse guy. We've seen the bullpen get burnt out in each of the last 3 years. Maybe that was due to a lack of talent. Mm. Maybe that was due to having to be used so much. It was probably a combination of the two. The one downside with Max Fried is he comes with that qualifying offer.
Right.
So you're talking about giving a guy 5 years, and what was the Carlos Rodon deal? That seems like the
it's
most
like
obvious
162,
count.
Something yeah, like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so like 7 and 162 or whatever the deal is. That seems to be the most likely comp for a guy like Fried, similar age, both left-handed, etc. So now you're talking about that kind of money plus the comp pick, which brings me to Blake Snell.
Mm-hmm.
So Snell doesn't have the comp pick because he opted out of his 2-year deal with the Giants.
Yeah.
And he seems pretty resolved to the fact that he's not going to do what he did last year, which was hold out until just about spring training.
God,
because
I hope not.
He spent the entirety of the first half of the year injured and trying to work his way back because he didn't have that normal buildup like he's had every year. So he doesn't come with a qualifying offer. He was one of, if not the best pitcher in the second half last year once he was finally healthy. He has two Cy Youngs. He has a track record of performing well in the AL East, and he should command like what, a 3-year deal?
Something
three
like
or
that.
Four, maybe an option for a fifth. So that's the guy I'm really highlighting as the number one starter. Moving into the bats, I do think Tyler O'Neill return does make some sense. He mashed at Fenway, hit a lot of home runs. He had a clutch gene, obviously that walk-off home run. I forget who it was against. He had multiple three home run games, and he fits the lineup. Who I do not want is Teoscar Hernandez.
I'm excited to hear this.
So I, leading up to the deadline, went on a rant saying, you're the Boston Red Sox, and Teoscar Hernandez wanted a two-year deal, and anybody that would listen, he was like, I fucking love Fenway Park. Get me in Fenway Park 81 games a year. And the Red Sox were like, 2 years? Like, that's a little much, buddy. And now he goes to the Dodgers. He performs well. He's going to get more money, more years, and he's going to cost you a second-round pick.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, let's get Teoscar Hernandez.
Now you
like,
want him.
No, you missed the boat on Teoscar Hernandez. Mm-hmm. You don't get to go back there and be like, oh, we're going to give you more money and give up the second-round pick. If he wasn't qualified, I would say maybe, okay, like, we can talk, have the Teoscar Hernandez conversation.
Yeah.
I still don't know that I'm comfortable giving up the money and years that it would take, but ultimately it's not my money, so I don't care. Like, the Red Sox, I'm gonna go on this rant time and time again. They're the Boston Red Sox. They have made money hand over fist every single year that they have owned the team. They're the third most valuable franchise in the entire sport. And not only that, John Henry owns the Penguins, Liverpool. They're angling for that Vegas NBA team. This is a guy who, I know these people don't make their money by spending ridiculously like this, but when you own sports teams, like, what money did they make in the 2018 season? Well, they had the best team of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is a team that if you win, people are going to show up. They're going to pack the stadium. They're going to buy your fucking $20 beers. And they're going to buy, like, six of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to spend your ridiculous top-of-the-market ticket prices. They're going to pay $70 for parking. They're going to buy your $300 jerseys. So pinching pennies is not the way to go.
Not at all. And, I mean, that's kind of been the argument. This whole kind of dark period. It's been, three, 4 years now of just mediocrity. And this really feels like the time where we go. They said full throttle last season. I don't really want to hear that ever again.
No.
But this is the offseason where you go.
This year we're turning the dial.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever they want to say, I don't really care. But this is the perfect offseason. You're not going to get this opportunity nowhere in the near future. You have all of your top prospects, all of your nationally recognized best prospects in the entire game ready to go, pretty much. They're all in AAA now. They're all probably going to be called up earlier than not in this year. And you can supplement them with real talent. All you really have to do is crack open the checkbook.
So here, I'm buying into the plan. And here's why. For the last however many years, we've listened to Sam Kennedy or Craig Breslow or Heim or Cora say, We have this plan. We believe in the plan. We're building sustainable for the future. They're using the same model that brought the Braves Acuna. They brought the Braves Strider. They all signed team-friendly deals. They did this. They did that. But they didn't do that until they had a team that they felt that was ready to compete. And for the last however many years, we had, starting in 2021, we had Marcelo Meyer. He was a high school shortstop. That same year, they took Roman Anthony with their third-round pick. Both high school guys. They're 19 years old. They're going to start in the lowest levels of the minors and work their way up. If the plan is when these guys who are now industry recognized top 10 consensus prospects, before we even mention Christian Campbell, who some people think is actually better than Roman Anthony, who's Baseball America's number one prospect in the league, if there is no better time to spend and supplement this team and build the next great Red Sox team than right now. You can say we have the position players, we have a bunch of potential stars on our hands like we had when we built that 2018 team with Jackie Bradley Jr., Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers, although he didn't really play a whole lot that year, and they went out and they supplemented it with exactly what we're talking about right now. First, it was David Price. That didn't work. Or I guess it was David Price and Craig Kimbrell. That didn't work. We still need a frontline starter. Dave Dombrowski says, how about Chris Sale? How about a guy who has the highest K per nines in baseball history? How about a guy that should walk into the Hall of Fame with his eyes closed? I don't know if he will now because of the injury bug that is caught up, but I would still argue that he should be a Hall of Fame pitcher. And by the time it's all said and done with him, obviously he had his career resurgence with the Braves this year, he still could be a consensus first ballot Hall of Famer. Well, I guess maybe not first ballot, but
yeah,
he should still be a Hall of Famer. So if this is the plan and this is how they say we've built 20 years of World Series contenders and we've done this and we've done that, we know what we're doing, now is the time to do that. Show that you still know what you're doing and supplement these this young crop of talents. Like, we didn't even mention Tristan Casas. We didn't mention Willie Abreu or Jaron Duran, whether or not they're here or not. Everyone seems to want to trade Tristan Casas because his paint because he paints his nails.
and does yoga. And does yoga in the outfield.
He walks around barefoot, He takes naps in the clubhouse.
No,
oh,
not allowed.
That.
He's taking too many mental swings. I don't care for it.
Yeah, nope, not at all. But you have all this major, almost major league ready talent supplemented with guys who took step forward. And Casas missed half the year. And still, obviously, he came back and mashed and then went through that lull where he looked like maybe he was feeling some of the repercussions of missing 6 months. And then towards the end of the year, he started to mash again. So I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, I really don't know with this offseason because all of the rumors we're hearing are that the Red Sox are going to spend a shit ton of money. And the track record of the last 2 to 3 years is we see all these reports. They're in on basically every top free agent, and they're talking to people. They're lowballing them on pretty much every area. And I don't know, part of me wants to believe this is the year. Part of me is still wary that they're not going to do shit.
Agreed. So I'm very wary.
I really don't know. There are some other names on this list, but it's kind of more just like pipe dreams for me. I do really like the idea of bringing in a one-year veteran deal. We see a lot of other teams do this, and this is kind of – I just don't really see it happening because the Red Sox have a ton of depth right now, which is obviously a good thing to have. But a lot of these one-year deals, you'll see like the Pirates, the Rays, teams like that, who will bring in, say, like a J.D. Martinez with the Mets last year, or Josh Bell really seems to do this a lot, where they will have like a torrid first half, and then they'll just get flipped at the deadline for like a mid-level prospect. And I think the Red Sox could do something like that. I obviously, this doesn't have to happen. It's kind of just an idea that I randomly had where I was like, I kind of like some of these old names. I like a lot of these old names, to be honest. I have a list here. So it's Amed Rosario, J.D. Martinez, Josh Bell, Carlos Santana, Whit Merrifield, Jose Iglesias, Gio Urshela. These names are basically all past their prime. Actually, all of them are. Except, I don't know, Amed Rosario is kind of a weird name here. But I just kind of, I don't know, part of me is like, why not? You know, especially with J.D. Martinez, obviously he was here in 2018. He's basically my favorite player of all time. And if you can bring him on a cheap deal, you need a right-handed bat. That was also, I'm kind of made sure to include just righties because Zach and I were talking about this too, where you could just use some more depth and you really need a right-handed bat. These veterans are mostly proven to at least be productive as a bench bat. And if an injury happens, you have to throw them in there. We'll see what happens. I don't really know if that will happen. It's kind of just a random thought that I had. We also talked about Alex Bregman. I don't really like this at all. I think it gives you a depth problem that you don't really want. If you bring in another third baseman, you already have Devers over there, and his defense is what it is, but it's not the end of the world over there, I really don't think. I think Devers is never really going to improve at third base. We always see, like, he can kind of make some nasty plays over there every once in a while, and then he'll, like, boot a ball into left field, and you're like, what the hell is he doing? But if you bring Bregman in here, that doesn't really help anything. You're just going to have a bunch more people calling for Devers to be a DH. I don't really want to hear that anymore. I think we're past that point. I really don't see it happening. And also, Bregman, I just don't really care for his personality much either.
Rafael Devers is going to be playing the field until he's into his 30s. Yeah. They're paying him, like I said, the richest contract in Red Sox history.
Right.
I don't have a problem with that being given to a DH. I know some people might. I think the Red Sox are very conscious of the way that people think of them.
Yeah.
And I just don't see them giving a guy that they're giving that kind of money to a DH.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of seals the deal there. I don't think it's going to happen. Also, they have been semi-rumored to Willy Adames. I don't really care for that either. He's fine. But, again, you don't really need
him. Unless you're getting a team to take Trevor Story,
right.
Which you're not.
Right.
There's no reason to get Willy Adames.
Yeah, you're kind of stuck with Trevor Story at this point. No team is going to trade for him with his injury history now. And we'll see. That kind of does it for the names that we just rattled off. But
two big ones missing.
Two big ones missing. That I'm going to come out and say these are both pipe dreams. Like, maybe one is less of a pipe dream than the other. And I know you feel strongly about Roky Sasaki.
Yeah, I'm a big Corbin Burnes guy. I didn't mention him because I kind of feel like they haven't been linked to him at all. They've been more linked to Fried or Snell because of that lefty aspect, which, again, I said doesn't matter. If you have two good lefties in the bullpen, right now the Red Sox have zero good lefties in the bullpen.
Hey, they got Bernie, though.
Yeah, he's out there.
He's definitely
sure.
A pitcher.
And he is left-handed. There's no denying that.
Cam Boozer? Boozman?
The carpenter? Or whatever, electrician, whatever he was. Which, I mean,
it's a cool story.
I don't want to get on my soapbox, but the fact that his career essentially ended because he was smoking weed in, like, 2016. 2016, we're pretty much ending people's careers for smoking weed. Give me a break on that shit.
Hey, he made it back, though.
I do like Bernardino.
Yeah.
But
he cannot be your feature lefty out of the bullpen.
They just ran him into the ground.
Yeah.
2 years in a row, they just ran him into the ground.
Because they had no other lefty.
Yeah. And so I'm okay if they're going to supplement the bullpen with some lefties. Tanner Scott's a name that gets thrown out there a bunch.
Yeah.
I'm all set seeing Bailey Horn. I'm all set seeing the Booze Man. Like, I'm
okay
Tanner Scott and Bernardino because you're not going to run either one of those guys into the ground if you have those two. But so I didn't mention Corbin Burnes, but I think besides Corbin Burnes, Roky Sasaki is the best pitcher on the market.
Oh, easily.
He's, what, 20 years old?
Yeah.
Coming in the same way Ohtani did. He's bypassing probably a contract that would top the 350 or whatever Yamamoto got last offseason by coming here.
Yeah, I think 325.
Yeah, he got like $1 million more than Gerrit Cole, which I can respect. But
hell yeah.
You're talking about a guy who's 20 years old, has a devastating splitter, can hit 100 with this fastball, and there's been a bunch of conflicting reports on this. When he originally got posted, everyone's like, well, he's a Dodger.
Yeah.
And obviously, Yamamoto, Ohtani, they're on the West Coast. There are a bunch of reasons to assume that the Dodgers are just going to get Sasaki for whatever $1 million in international signing bonus they have. But there's also been reports that he might prefer a smaller market team so he can acclimate to life in the U.S. I mean, this isn't a guy that's 25 years old coming over to the U.S. This is a guy at 20 years old who's going to be living in a completely different country, speaking a completely different language from him. So could a team like the Rays, who have a track record of establishing young pitchers, building them up? Sure.
That would be crazy.
But this is just going to be strictly who has the best pitch.
Yep.
Relatively speaking, everyone has around the same amount of money in international pool space. And you hear pool space all the time in trades, and everyone makes fun of it with cash considerations and players to be named later. But this is what it's for. If he's listed after December 1st, it's the 2025 period, which resets a bunch of the money for a bunch of the teams. Red Sox have $6.2 million remaining in that 2025 period, which is middle of the pack. But like I said, that money is so incremental that it's probably going to be based on simply giving him the best pitch. Do the Red Sox have a good enough pitch? Let's talk through it.
Yeah.
So he wants a place that's going to be able to develop him. The Red Sox have had some early results in the Craig Breslow, Andrew Bailey. Is his name Kevin Willard? Something like that, the driveline guy.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, whoever the driveline guy is, they've had good early results with guys like Cutter Crawford and Tanner Houck, who took steps forward. Evidently, there are a bunch of teams in the league that think Nick Pivetta is some frontline starter. Elsewhere, they've had success. Breslow has had success with Cade Horton in the Cubs organization. Andrew Bailey has had success with Logan Webb in the Giants organization. Breslow, when he was with the Cubs, took their pitching prospects from one of the softest throwing farm systems in the league.
I think it's Justin Willard.
It's Kevin Willard. I don't know where I came up with that one.
I think he's a basketball coach.
Is he?
Maybe Maryland.
No, that's
Yeah, Maryland men's basketball.
Wow. Always got college hoops on the brain, I guess.
Yeah, because of your parlays earlier.
Yeah, they all went very well. Shout out UConn, though, minus 36 and a half or whatever the number was. Beat up on the Dolphins of
that
LeMoyne.
That was insane.
Whenever you see UConn playing the LeMoyne Dolphins, you have no choice but to bet on that
game.
Dude,
you were sweating that out, too.
Yeah, I came right down to it. I never want to see number 30 on the court for UConn ever again. The guy was getting absolutely cooked.
When they're playing a real team, you will not.
Well, they showed that stat. That. It was like 0 points from the bench, and UConn was up like 40. I mean, there's no way that was correct. Obviously, we weren't listening with sound, but
yeah.
And there's no way number 30 is a starter. But anyway, back to the point.
Quick tangent.
Yeah, back to the point. The Red Sox do have good early results on developing pitchers.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in the system. Like, obviously, I mentioned Cade Horton and Logan Webb, and I think Camilo Doval has fallen off a cliff since Andrew Bailey
left. Yeah, what
left.
The hell happened with that?
Get him here.
I wouldn't mind it.
Dude, he's only ever pitched well with Andrew Bailey as his pitching coach.
Yeah.
And it seems like they're going to sell low on him. Like, there's almost no reason not for the Red Sox to not be in on him, especially given the state of the bullpen.
Yeah. I mean, this is a time to take those flyers, especially when you have a bunch of spots to fill and you're not bringing back Jansen. Chris Martin's like 39 and wants to come back, but I'm kind of all set.
Back to Sasaki.
Yeah.
Quick tangent on, which it all does tie in the pitching development scheme of things, but I do think there's an underrated portion here in that Sasaki can be a part of that. We mentioned Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, Christian Campbell. Braden Montgomery obviously hasn't played a game yet because of the injury, but the Red Sox have a good developing young core, and I mentioned as one of the reasons why you might just assume he's going to the Dodgers of Yamamoto and Ohtani.
Right.
Red Sox have a WBC teammate of Sasaki of their own in another guy that everyone wants to trade.
Everybody despises.
For no reason.
Yeah.
All he's ever done is been a nice guy, been a good guy.
Yeah.
He's like, he took the coaching staff out to dinner. And he is exactly what everybody bitches about. He's against everything what everybody bitches about on the offense. They strike out too much. Guy doesn't strike out.
No.
We're going to get to Yoshida, but I do think he could be crucial in the potential recruitment of Sasaki, who we know the Red Sox are going to be interested in because they sent scouts. And was Breslow one of the GMs, Pobos, whatever, that actually traveled to Japan to see him?
He's a nerd. It sounds right. I don't know if I ever heard that.
I know Cashman did, among other people.
It might have been before he was even here, Breslow.
Obviously, this is a guy that's been on
the
radar of teams since the WBC.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when he came on, like, our radars. But these guys have been scouting a guy like Sasaki for years.
Yeah, dude is 22, and he's already got, like, 5 professional years under his belt. That's insane.
It's interesting to me that he's willing to go that Ohtani route of being the international amateur rather than cashing in. I mean, like, at what point do you have to get to? Like, I mean, obviously, Ohtani, they were calling him the Japanese Babe Ruth over there, and he was hitting and pitching. So, like, he beat the NPL, the Nippon Professional League, I think it's called. Yeah. So he beat the NPL. He was too good for the NPL. But imagine how good you have to be as a 22-year-old pitcher to be like, fuck this shit, I need to level up.
Yeah.
Like, what a player.
It's got to be boring over there if you're just striking everybody out all the time.
And not to mention the value that comes. I mean, we mentioned that Yamamoto contract of $325 million. You're going to get him, if the Red Sox get him, they're getting him for $6.26 million.
Yeah.
Like, that is what a steal.
That is a third of what Rob Refsnyder is making.
Yeah.
Or, no, Rob Refsnyder is making, yeah, making a third of that.
Yeah. Yes. And not only that, you give him $6.26 million, it doesn't count against your luxury tax number. If he, I assume any team that signs him is going to start him on the major league team.
Have to.
But I guess theoretically there is a world where he starts in AAA, but I feel like the competition that he's facing in the NPL is already better than what he's going to be facing, and especially AAA, because we know that that's kind of a weird mixture of prospects and guys that are just hanging
Yeah.
So you're getting a guy for all of his team control.
Mm-hmm.
So you're paying nothing for a frontline starter. $6 million. I mean, there's no contract that is signed this entire offseason is going to be better value than what you're getting Roki Sasaki for.
No, absolutely not. And I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to Sasaki other than just what I've seen on like mainstream outlets. To me, it's tough to imagine a world where the Dodgers don't get this guy, especially with all of the Japanese people they already have on their team. Like, Yamamoto and Ohtani are the easiest sell to a Japanese player that I've ever seen. Two of the best Japanese players maybe ever, especially Ohtani. Yamamoto remains to be seen, but it does help.
You
that
probably cut out the word Japanese on Ohtani, just the
best player
ever.
Yeah. I really don't like Babe Ruth. That's a whole nother argument. That
murderer.
Yeah.
Not enough people talk about
exactly,
that.
Exactly. But it does help that money isn't really a factor here. And a lot of people were praising Andrew Bailey last year. He kind of turned around the rotation that no one expected much from. They ebbed and flowed pretty much throughout the whole year last year. But they showed signs of being an elite rotation.
It is funny that everyone was so quick. I mean, I was guilty of it, too. Everybody anointed Andrew Bailey as the Messiah.
Yeah.
The rotation was like, and they obviously showed flashes, but for the most part were lacking for the majority of the year.
Yeah, but he did get a lot out of Tanner Houck. He got a lot out of Cutter Crawford, and we'll see. I think that is a good sell here, and Yoshida, I think we'll get into it more later, too. I don't love how they're treating Yoshida. I don't know how willing he will be to be like, oh, this place is awesome. They've treated me so great throughout the entire time I've been here, when they basically turned him into a platoon bat.
That is, and like the fact that when Devers was hurt and they were working him back slowly.
Yeah.
And Yoshida had just come off the thumb injury. He struggled to start. He was finally starting to get going. Devers could only DH, and they were like, you want us to put you in the outfield?
Where he was fine.
And that's the thing. They said all of last offseason, we actually think Yoshida's better than what the metrics say in left field. And then the season rolls along, and they're like, we would rather call up Johnny Slapdick from fucking AAA and put him out there to, I mean, Mickey Gasper is still looking for his first major league hit.
God.
They would have stuck him in left field before they ever stuck Masataka Yoshida out there.
Oh, yeah. And that's such a crime, man. Like, he was not that bad. He has a noodle arm. Yeah.
Sure.
Fine.
There's a giant wall out there that, as the Nesson podcast will tell us, is 310 feet out there. Not very far to throw the ball.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. We'll see if that plays a factor here at all. I don't think we'll hear about it if it does.
Even at the end of the season, Yoshida was doing his final press appearances, and he was like, man, I fucking love it here. I cannot wait until the playoffs start.
Good for him, man.
They just absolutely hung him out to dry all year long. And at the end of the day, he was still like, woo, I love being a Red Sox. Can't wait for the playoffs
next year. That is the vibe you need, especially with all of the BS going on right now. If you can have a Yoshida who's just like, this is fucking cool. I make like, what, $15 million a year? Something
like
that.
Like 17, I think it is.
Yeah. Like, that's not a terrible contract.
I know that I'm going to get into that, but $17 million or whatever the deal is, and everyone's like, well, this is an absolute
albatross. Get him out. He can't play left.
Boston Red Sox.
He's terrible.
$18 million. That's what it is. 2025 payroll, 18.6.
But I don't want to pay $18 million for a DH. dude.
No, we can pay fucking 37 though, or whatever Devers is making.
Yeah, so. and get Tay Oster here for a hell of a lot more than that now.
Yeah.
But speaking of outfielders who are going to struggle in Fenway Park, allegedly, the Red Sox are connected to Juan Soto. And connected, I guess, is a strong word, but...
Oh, they're meeting with him.
Yeah, but...
So are the Blue Jays.
But so are the Blue Jays, who are... they were tracking Shohei Ohtani's plane last year, and he wasn't even fucking on it.
The Rays were connected for a minute.
Yeah, so...
I guess the Rays aren't meeting with him, which right. bodes well for the Red Sox.
But. Right. So, passing... Well, first it came out that John Heyman reported this, and both of you and I were kind of like... John Heyman, so he came out first and was like, hey, by the way, the Boston Red Sox are like kind of sniffing around Juan Soto. And Zach and I kind of were both talking about it, and it's John Heyman. Like, everybody kind of knows that Boris is like the devil on his shoulder, and it's just feeding him information so that they can get more money out of these teams. I'm all for players getting more money. I don't know. The idea of, like, a journalist kind of doing that, it just seems like a conflict of interest. That's neither here nor there. That's not really the point of this. We didn't really believe it before Jeff Passan came out in this big article that we were talking about earlier with Nick Pivetta. He said that the Red Sox were planning on meeting with Juan Soto. I don't think that meeting has happened yet, but he did report that the Blue Jays, Red Sox, Yankees, and Mets were meeting with Juan Soto this week. Now, meeting and signing is two very different things. I don't want to get my hopes up that he would come here. I also just think from a personnel standpoint, of course it's Juan Soto, but looking at your prospects, looking at the outfielders you already have, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Especially...
It's Juan Soto.
Yeah. So you disagree on that?
It's Juan Soto.
It is Juan Soto, but part of me is like, we have Duran, we have Abreu, hopefully one of them gets moved for a pitcher.
Neither of those guys combined are Juan Soto.
Yeah, but also you have Roman Anthony coming up.
He's
not
Juan Soto. I am the biggest, I made a sweeping declaration months ago that Roman Anthony is going to win at least one MVP in his career. He's not Juan Soto.
Does Juan Soto even have an MVP? I don't think he does.
Yeah, oh, we're both completely great content here. So we both go completely silent to Google whether or not Juan Soto.
Did you hear our keyboards clicking? Yeah, maybe you did.
No MVP.
Exactly.
For Juan Soto.
Exactly. So wow. I mean, he's good. But he doesn't have an MVP, and I guess that doesn't really matter because he hits the shit out of the ball.
Career OPS plus of 160.
Goddamn. Okay, yeah, I want Juan Soto. I don't care about it. Forget everything just said.
You just make it work. Like, when you have, like, what? Juan Soto is 26 years old. Mm-hmm. He just turned 26. Yep. So he's going into his age 26 season.
His prime.
He's already, I'll say it, he's the best player in baseball. I think he's better than Ohtani.
That's interesting.
It's like, obviously, Ohtani steals bases, but like I would take Soto.
Like,
over
pure
Ohtani.
Hitter? Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there.
So, you just make it work. It doesn't matter. Like, sure, like, oh, like, everyone plays this game, like, and especially with the Patriots. Like, you see so many people be like, oh, I wouldn't trade a second round pick for T. Higgins. This second round pick could be anything, even Higgins. Okay, well, that second round pick is Jalen Polk, who couldn't catch a cold.
Hey, caught a touchdown this week. People
I
could have
caught that touchdown. Granted, I wouldn't have been able to get that open. But if I were plopped into that exact spot already open, I could have caught that touchdown.
Remains to be seen.
It just, he's a guy, you just make it work. I don't care how you make it work, you make it work. He's not going to be a right fielder at Fenway Park, which I know this irked me last night, and I was texting you about it. Some people said, if you're paying Juan Soto $700 million, you're damn right he's playing right field. He was a Gold Glove finalist.
Oh, yeah.
Derek Jeter has like 45 Gold Gloves and wasn't even the best shortstop on his team.
God, no. God,
no. He was -5 outs above average, 14th percentile.
Yuck.
Playing in Yankee Stadium, which I know I just said that left field wall at Fenway is 310 feet. out there. The wall in Yankee Stadium is like 47 feet away from home plate. And this guy put up a -5 outs above average playing in that park.
I'm not really listening to your argument. I'm too busy thinking about how Juan Soto was a Gold Glove finalist, so your argument's invalid.
Yep, obviously. But Gold Glove finalist doesn't matter if you're talking about Rookie of the Year. It's just that he could possibly win a Gold Glove at some point in his career, and that's how you determine that.
Yep. So, obviously. Dude, like, we talked about this too. The Yankees didn't even put Juan Soto in right field at Fenway when they visited.
No, and Boone specifically said it's because I don't think he can play right field at Fenway.
Exactly.
He's not good enough defensively.
Exactly. So it's a good problem to have if you have Juan Soto on your team. And I think we'll get to the sort of outfield logjam that we have right now. But I would argue that this makes your outfield logjam kind of easier. You know you have Juan Soto. You know that you're calling up Roman Anthony at some point this year. It kind of makes it easier to move on from a Jarren Duran or a Willy Abreu. I know I kind of was saying the opposite of that earlier when we were talking about this, but now listening to Zach and also just thinking about it, it's Juan fucking Soto. Like, how sick would that be?
Neither Jarren Duran or Willy Abreu are even going to become a top 10 player in the league. No. I know Duran played like one for most of the year.
Yeah. Do we think he cools off? It's hard to repeat that.
It is hard to repeat that. Like, I mean, I think he's bound to take a step backwards. What does a step backwards look like from a guy who put up an 8-WAR season, had a higher WAR than Juan Soto?
Yeah.
And I think part of that is defensive metrics. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know. If you're trying to argue that Jarren Duran's better than Juan Soto because his WAR was, like, just barely higher.
I don't really understand WAR, so I can't argue either.
And, like, every time I hear somebody associated with a team talk about WAR, they're like, oh, yeah, we have a completely different calculation of WAR than anything that Baseball Reference or FanGraphs uses for theirs. So even from team to team, the definition of WAR is going to differentiate.
Yeah, and just one more quick thing on Soto. We do have another quote from Jeff Passan. This article was really good, by the way. I'm a big Jeff Passan guy, so I will vouch for him. But he said, another team with Soto at the top of its want list, the Boston Red Sox. They also have a meeting on the books with Soto this week. And like the Blue Jays, their aggressiveness extends into the starting pitching market as well. So that transitions into our next question.
Just a real quick note on that. I am encouraged that they're at least meeting with him, because I do think that getting a meeting means they're at least somewhat aware of what the price is going to be. Like, they're not going into it and Boris is going to be like, yeah, we're looking at 15 and 650 and the Red Sox are going to be like, how about 7 and 275? Like that's not even on the same planet.
Hey, we'll go up to 300 if you want.
Exactly, like they did on Yamamoto. And sure, he had another $30 million sitting on the table.
Yeah.
It gets leaked a year later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, obviously,
it's kind of always how it be lately. But yeah, I'm with you. I like that they're at least sniffing around and being like, hey, like, you know, obviously it hasn't been great the last few years, but it's Juan fucking Soto. Let's try.
Quick question for you.
Okay.
Percentage.
Yeah.
Red Sox sign Juan Soto. What are you thinking?
15.
No, geez, that's way higher than I was going to go.
Yeah?
I think there's like a 5% chance they get him. I think ultimately, like, yeah, like they're probably meeting with him, but I think the Yankees and Mets are going to get into a dick measuring contest about who runs New York, especially with Steve Cohen.
Right.
And I don't know. Like, I know people have been critical of Hal Steinbrenner ever since George died, but this feels like a type of thing where it's like Steve Cohen's going to try and big dog you, and you can't out big dog the original big dog.
Well, that's the thing, though, is Steinbrenner said that they were going to cut payroll, and they already re-signed Gerrit Cole. That was weird. He, like, opted out and then opted
Talk
into the same.
Talk about big dogged Gerrit
Cole. The same exact fucking deal.
Absolutely big dogged by the Yankees there.
Yeah, dude. They were like, fuck off.
Yeah, how about you opt out, and instead of us giving you that extra year, you just sign that same deal. And he's like, well, I guess I don't have a choice.
Yeah. But, okay, what I was saying was, Steinbrenner said he was going to cut payroll. And I don't know. At this point, I just feel like the Mets are going to outbid everybody.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way.
Uncle Stevie.
When Scherzer said that before they traded him that their contention window wasn't going to open until like 26, 27.
And then they made the NLCS.
Yeah, promptly made the NLCS.
Yes, yeah.
They just didn't want Max Scherzer on the books for like 45 mil or whatever the fuck the contract was.
Yeah, like one last quick thing on Soto is a lot of people have been saying that Cashman and the Yankees front office have a number in mind that they will not go past for Soto. I bet the Red Sox have probably a lower number, but also a number that they won't go past.
Definitely a lower number.
Yeah. But yeah, we have a quick question here, and that is, will the Red Sox spend this offseason?
No.
How? Okay, so how no, though? Like, just not at all? Or, like...
I mean, I think they'll make...
They're going to go bargain bin hunting again?
Incremental upgrades. Like, okay. So, what concerns me is... I forget when it was or who had it, but Breslow did an interview.
Oh, yeah.
And was like, well, like, we were on Seth Lugo. Who was the other guy that he said that they were on? It was another pitcher that ended up popping this year.
Imanaga?
Yep, Imanaga's one. I don't think that was the name. But anyways, I guess the names don't really matter. We were on the right guys. They just signed elsewhere. We were on Seth Lugo. He became a frontline starter. So I worry that they're going to go out there and they're going to look at a guy like Sean Manaea, Luis Severino.
They're going to look at him and be like, oh, he would be nice
like
to have.
Any number of these guys, or even Bieber coming off of Tommy John.
Yeah.
And be like, all right, well, it's like the Moneyball thing. Like, why would we go out there and why would we sign Max Fried when we can create him in the aggregate?
Oh, yes. Let's do that in the Lord's year 2024.
Like, I don't think Seth Lugo was bargain bin hunted. Well, the time I did. At the time, I thought it was bargain bin
hunted. The Royals beat him. The Royals beat us for him.
Yeah. So I worry that they're going to look at those guys and be like, well, we have faith in our ability to identify these guys that are going to take a step forward. So why would we go out there and get the solidified frontline guy when we think we can just sign someone and who's going to take that step forward? So I think they're going to spend and like obviously upgrade the team, but not to the level that everyone wants them to.
Yeah, I wrote down somewhere in the middle of spending and not spending, and that's pretty much what Zach just said. So I'm kind of on that same line of thinking. I do think that we might see some action in the trade market, which doesn't necessarily count as spending, but we'll see. The other big kind of question that we've floated is there is very clearly an outfield logjam, and who do we feel is the odd man out?
So I think it's Jarren Duran, and I flip back and forth on this a lot.
Yeah.
At first I thought for sure it was Willier, and then the whole thing happened with the slur, and kind of made me start thinking that maybe it's Duran. I know there was a lot of talk about how he didn't seem very remorseful in his apology.
No.
And he had a career year. Like, I don't think his value is ever going to be higher than where he's at. But on the flip side, I know you're going to argue on the other side. So when I said I think it's Duran to one of my buddies, he said to me, I just don't think it is. Every time Cora talks about Jarren Duran, he talks about how he's the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have a bunch of these young kids like Jarren Duran who were highly touted prospects.
Yeah.
They came up. It's not going to immediately click for all these guys. Prospect progression isn't linear. Like, we saw Duran go up and down for however many years before it finally clicked for him this year.
Right.
But when you listen to Cora talk about Duran, he talks about him like he's the standard that they're trying to set for the organization. So how can you then talk for a year about how this guy's the standard and we want guys to play like Jaron? He goes out there, he busts his ass, he turns singles into doubles repeatedly, he wants to post every day, and then also be like, see you later.
Hey, get the hell out of here.
So I ultimately believe that it's a business, and they're going to trade whichever outfielder not named Roman Anthony that gets them the best value. Like, I don't think Anthony's going anywhere. No. And I said this.
He better not.
I said this a couple weeks ago to my buddies. There are two pitchers in baseball that I would trade Roman Anthony for. And neither of them are – it's not happening on either of them.
Who
any guesses?
Mm.
Take your two guesses.
Okay. two starting pitchers?
Yep.
Does Shohei count?
No.
Okay.
It's not him.
Ooh. I'm trying to think more young guys, but I don't. It can't be Gerrit Cole. I pray to God it's not Gerrit Cole.
No, not Gerrit Cole.
Is there someone I'm just like heavy?
There's two guys
you're
just
on?
Completely blanking on.
I'm surprised. It's been a long day. Yamamoto?
Nope.
Fuck. All right, hit me. I don't know. My brain is off.
Derek Skubal and Paul Skeens.
Oh, that was, yeah, dude.
Yeah. I guess maybe Yamamoto.
That was bad.
I didn't think of Yamamoto, so I guess maybe he's a guy I would consider it for, but Skubal and Skeens are
dude,
the
why
two
did
side
I just
dogs.
Forget that both of them existed?
Yeah, I don't think either, especially not Skeens. Like, maybe the Tigers in a year or two are looking to move off of Skubal.
Well, they were for, like,
and then they
up until
off.
The trade deadline,
then
they're like, oh, wait, shit, we're decent?
Yeah, well, we're good. Well, I mean, I guess they won a round, so it's hard to be like, oh, they weren't really good. The rest of the league just sucked. But,
yeah.
Like, I mean, the Red Sox, they, what, the...
They gave it to them on
a silver
platter.
I forget what the percentage was. The Tigers had like a 1.3% chance on August 1st to get in, and they got in.
I think they had a series with the Red Sox in that time, too,
right?
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, on the other side of the outfield logjam argument, I'm going to go Willy Abreu. I'll preface with Jarren Duran has more trade value right now, and I guess this transitions into the next quick point is, does Willy Abreu's gold glove increases trade value at all? I don't really think so, and you kind of hit the nail on the head here.
Yeah, the metrics are the metrics. Yeah. Like, teams aren't going to be like, oh, well, he didn't win the gold glove, but he still had incredible metrics in the toughest right field in baseball. Like, they're not just, like, this isn't 2000 where everyone's like, Derek Jeter's a great shortstop because he has a bunch of gold gloves.
But he
second
makes
Derek
jump
Jeter
throws.
Shot. Oh, he dove into the stands when he didn't have to catch a fly ball that was going to land like 15 feet in fair territory.
Oh, yeah. He definitely ran and leaned into that.
Yeah, because he's an actress.
He's
that's
a weenie.
I guess actor. Yeah. Like, that's just what he does. He was going for an Emmy.
Right. And having this argument kind of makes me not care as much who's the odd man out, because if you can get a starter of a Garrett Crochet or someone similar on that level, I don't really care who you give up. To be honest,
it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, yeah. So that also transitions into what could a trade for one of these starters look like? And we kind of both agree that we don't want to give up one of the big five prospects. So other than that, you have a lot of young guys still. You have a Willy Abreu. You have Jarren Duran. You have some other guys in the minors, too, that are just on a lower tier than these guys. But the top candidates would probably be Garrett Crochet. Jesus Luzardo, I don't even know if that's, like, being floated anymore, but it is the Marlins, so probably.
Yeah, it's weird because he was, like, obviously he was a very prevalent name last offseason.
Yeah.
But then he spent, I think he got hurt in, like, July. He was
right.
on my fantasy team, so I know that. But he got hurt in, like, July and missed the rest of the season, so that name kind of died down.
Yeah.
The Marlins... Like, everyone's going to talk about the Mariners as a hotbed of young pitching and a good trade partner. I think the Marlins are also a really good trade partner.
Kind of a pitching factory.
We know that this was the last regime, but they had interest in Edward Cabrera, which, like, hindsight, getting Edward Cabrera, I know he hasn't necessarily put it all together yet, but getting Edward Cabrera for, like, 4 months of Justin Turner, who you just let walk anyways, is...
Hey,
that's a misstep. I'm a blue guy, but...
Cabrera was nasty in the show.
Oh, yeah.
Did you play that year?
Yeah, the Future Stars year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was really good.
Gross. Another guy who's actually on my fantasy team is Luis Castillo. And it's kind of been rumored for a while that the Mariners don't want to move on from any of their young starters. They have like four or five of them.
Yeah.
But Luis Castillo is not in that category. He was the ace of the staff. Now he's kind of being overshadowed by George Kirby, among others. And... this has kind of been talked about for a while, but I feel like a trade with the Mariners almost makes too much sense. You have a pitching factory, a young rotation, pretty much 1-5, and no offense whatsoever.
And I think like you said, it almost makes too much sense, and a lot of people jumped on that bandwagon last year. I do think maybe that was a year premature because the Mariners are contending. Obviously, they what, they blew a double-digit lead in the division.
It was terrible, yeah.
Which is a massive collapse. But they're looking for major league-ready hitters.
Right.
So if you're talking about trading one of... I do think, obviously, Roman Anthony is off-limits, and I think Christian Campbell's getting pretty close to that level.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about, like, Marcelo Meyer or, like, Kyle Teal for, like, George Kirby, I think I'd do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was a year early because those guys weren't on the doorstep yet.
Right.
They had only just gotten their feet wet in Double A.
No, I'm with you there. I think also it's the Mariners. Like, they have never really contended ever.
Stupid teams do stupid things and
right.
make stupid decisions.
So part of me is like, maybe they're just going to be like, oh, we love our young rotation and we love scoring one run a game and blowing a double-digit lead to the Houston Astros.
Part of me thinks that they're aware of their park factors. They play in the most pitcher-friendly park in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like, I mean, eventually, like, you got to see that that's not working. Just leaning into having a nasty pitching staff and not being able to score any runs, because eventually you do play 81 games. Not at is it still
it's Safeco? T-Mobile now.
Okay,
yeah.
T-Mobile. Stop changing park names.
I
don't
know.
Like it.
It confuses us.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, they've been linked to Garrett Crochet for a little while now. That's kind of been a recent development. And I've also seen that the White Sox would take a package headlined by Willier Abreu.
Done.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big
I don't care who else
Crochet
you want.
Guy. I question how well he's going to hold up over the course of the season.
Well, yeah, because he didn't really hold up this year.
No, and obviously they shut him down. Like, mm-hmm. he would go in for two or three innings and be absolutely nasty and then get pulled.
Yeah.
But this is also a guy that hasn't pitched a full season as a starter yet.
Right.
And I do – it concerns me that when his name was being floated a lot at the deadline, he was like, I'm not pitching up.
Yeah.
I'm not throwing a single pitch in the playoffs unless you pay me.
Uh-huh.
And, like – to me, like, that's a guy that, like, sure, it's a guy that you look to extend if it is, but he wants to get paid.
Yeah.
And he hasn't done anything to get paid yet. So if you're a guy like Crochet that's like, pay me, if you're the Red Sox and you're trading for him, I'm like, all right, let's see what kind of team-friendly extension we can get you
mm-hmm.
to. And I think he's more likely to go the Tristan Casas route of, I want to get paid and I'm willing to sign an extension, but I also want to get what I'm worth. I'm not willing to sign a Bayo or Raffaello or even an Acuna or Jackson Churio level extension.
Right. It'll be interesting. Yeah, it will be interesting to keep an eye on this throughout the offseason. I do think some trade is imminent. I don't know.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that's for a starter. I don't know if that's to fix the bullpen, but something, you have an embarrassment of riches right now. You have to make something out of it.
You don't have enough spots for the guys.
Exactly.
Right now.
Exactly. And this is a great problem to have. But another key aspect of this team that was pretty terrible last year was the bullpen. A lot of that had to do with injuries. But still, you had 37-year-old Kenley Jansen who quit on the team in, like, end of August.
I'm a Kenley boy.
Even. Yeah.
Through and through, I'm a Kenley boy.
Yeah, but
he
also
quit on the team, but the team also, like, if you're 37-year-old Kenley Jansen, like, what do you have to pitch for?
Yeah, dude, and the other aspect of that was it was so funny that pretty much after he quit on the Red Sox, he was just, like, flew back to L.A. and followed the Dodgers playoff run. I wouldn't be surprised if they were partying in the clubhouse with him, if they just let him in. Because it's probably a given that he's going back there next year, but we'll see. But a big thing the Red Sox do have to do this offseason is fix the goddamn bullpen. Because it was bad. There were a ton of games last year and the year before that where the bullpen just choked. There were probably double-digit games where that happened. And there are somehow a lot of elite closers, mostly in the NL Central, that teams are trying to move on from. The biggest names are Devin Williams and Ryan Helsley. Both all-stars. Both have wipeout stuff. And it's kind of just a pick-your-poison type thing there. I don't really know what a package for a closer would look like. I guess the most recent kind of comparison that you could make is the Josh Hader trade from the Brewers. Let me bring that up. So, yeah, okay. And this was an interesting deal, too, because none of these prospects really panned out. It was Josh Hader to the Padres for Robert Gasser. I don't know what the hell happened to him. Denelson Lamet fell off a cliff. Taylor Rogers and Esteori Ruiz.
The So Gas I guess, Man, I believe, had Tommy John.
Okay. Is he still a good prospect?
Well, he debuted for them this year.
Oh, yes, he did. Yeah.
He was good, if I remember correctly, until the Tommy John came for him.
Yeah. So that is, like, kind of the most recent one I can think of. Can you think of another, like, similar closer trade that has happened recently?
No, but I don't. Like, it's tough because that Hader deal was at the deadline where obviously
relievers
are much more coveted. So I would maybe look towards the Kimbrel deal as a better comp. I'm sure there are other reliever trades that have occurred between now and 2016.
They're not all that common.
No, especially because teams know that you can get so much more for a reliever at the deadline than you do in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, could this be a case where these guys don't move before the trade
deadline?
Maybe
that's a risk with Helsley.
Yeah.
I think Williams, there's a more likely chance that he moves because he spent most of the year injured last year, so you don't want to risk him getting hurt again.
And it's the Brewers who really don't want to pay anyone. I think they're, like, pinching pennies over his arbitration right now.
Yeah, he had a club option for $10.5 million, but his ARB number, because he didn't pitch most of the year, was at like $8 million.
Uh-huh.
So they declined it and were willing to take him to ARB.
That's crazy,
which is like
dude.
Number one way to piss off a player. Yeah, like you might as well, like at that point you have no choice but to trade him, because why, when he hits the free agent market next year, is he gonna do you any favors at all when you just fucked him out of potentially $3 million?
Absolutely. And to me, I kind of like Devin Williams a little bit more than Helsley.
That changeup is just so ridiculous.
Exactly, exactly. But the argument with Helsley is, my dad and I were talking about this. He told me that I think the Red Sox were the only team who did not have a pitch over 100 miles an hour thrown this season.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, and Helsley just throws absolute gas.
Also,
that could be interesting.
The familiarity between Heim and the system is big. I know I mentioned this. Like, they railroaded Heim.
Oh, they did.
So, I don't know. I preached about the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan was Heim comes in and he rebuilds the farm system. You now have one of, if not the best farm system in the league.
It worked. He did his job.
But fan interest was dipping.
Yep.
Fan animosity towards ownership group and Heim in general was that high.
Yeah.
So they sent him out. They completely hung him out to dry. And then now, 2 years later, they're going to talk about how we're going to spend money. And it's going to be similar to Ben Sherrington having his fingerprints all over 2018 World Series. Whenever that next Red Sox World Series comes, it's going to be Marcelo Meyer, Christian Campbell, Roman Anthony, guys like that, that were even Willy or Abreu, who were identified by Heim and acquired by Heim.
Yeah.
So I do wonder if there's any sort of animosity that if Craig Breslow comes calling and is like, hey, any of our guys that you like that you want to bring in? Like,
Mike could name a few.
Like, I'm sure, like, I mean, obviously he's going to be like, yeah, about Roman Anthony.
Yeah.
But obviously that's not going to happen for Ryan Helsley. But I do worry that Heim might be like, why am I going to trade with you guys? Like, your ownership group absolutely screwed me. But I said earlier, this is a business. Heim is in the business of rebuilding the Cardinals, who are in a really bad spot.
Oh, they are in a rough spot.
So, at the end of the day, I think if the offer is the offer and there's a prospect he loves enough, then he pulls the trigger on a deal and puts any animosity towards the Red Sox organization aside.
Yeah. We have this later, but I guess we can just get to it now. I really want Garrett Whitlock back in the bullpen. I think we had a similar situation with Daniel Bard all that time ago. He was a really good reliever, and then the Red Sox kind of just screwed him over. They were like, let's turn you into a starter. And I don't know if that was a Whitlock decision. I don't know if that was a front office decision or a little bit of both, but clearly he's frail. Clearly he cannot pitch that much in a single year. So you bring him out of the bullpen. He's a long reliever. He can pitch every 3 to 4 days, and he was lights out in 2021. And then they just decided, we don't want a long reliever. Why would we want that? Why would we want a guy who can get 3-inning saves? No, let's make him a starter. And it has just been all downhill from there. Who knows? He might be broken at this point. I really don't know. But
definitely could be.
Yeah, like his confidence could be fried. I know he put on a bunch of weight last year to hopefully be more durable. It just didn't work out.
Hurt again.
Yeah. So who knows? But he was lights out last time he was in the bullpen. Just put him back in the bullpen and do not fuck with him again. At this point, you've probably gotten more value. It's a Rule 5 pick from the Yankees. Like, you got more value out of him than you probably would have ever expected. He is literally on the calendar right there. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, it's true. November.
Yeah. We have a calendar in our office, and Garrett Whitlock's on it. I don't know why he is.
Second reference to this of the night, but about it's like the Michael Scott vasectomy. Snip, snap, snip, snap.
Yeah.
Bullpen starter.
Yeah.
And I personally, I've seen enough of it. I'm completely on board with you. I've seen him as a starter. He was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people keep trying to comp him to Rick Porcello.
Yeah.
He's never going to be the innings eater that Rick Porcello was.
Uh-uh.
He's simply not durable enough. He has proven to be, like you said, an elite, elite bullpen weapon. And when, obviously, the rotation was a giant question mark for you, but when the bullpen, I would argue, is an even bigger hole for
you,
especially when your rotation is weak and you have an elite weapon, you just refuse to put him out there. Like, oh my God, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting to get a different result. I mean, what the fuck else?
We're at that point.
Yeah. What else would that be?
Yeah. So some other options besides hopefully just sticking Whitlock in the bullpen and not letting him leave again, and maybe a potential trade with Helsley or Devin Williams. Tanner Scott's a free agent. He's been already pretty heavily linked to the Red Sox.
Yeah, I know. I know a lot of people think that they'd be pretty surprised if he wasn't. He might already be on the team.
Yeah. So that's cool. He wasn't he an All-Star? I mean, it was with the Marlins, so it's like whatever.
But then he moved to where the Padres.
Yeah, and then I think he was pretty good.
A haul for him.
Yeah, and he's probably not re-signing there. You could also sign some, like, lower-level guys. I know, like, I think Carlos Estevez is.
Yeah. Well, that's a big part of building a bullpen. Like, you can talk about identifying the right guys as starters, but, like, that where it actually matters is in the bullpen.
Right.
Because there's only so many elite arms to go around. If you can identify the Brennan Bernardinos of the world and bring them in and have them be successful, obviously you can't run them into the ground.
Yeah.
But, like, that's an area. The Red Sox do have a fairly good track record of finding Brennan Bernardino or Cam Boozer or any number, even Whitlock, who come in and have success in the bullpen. So I do have more faith in them to do that than go out and find the gem of the free agent class starting pitcher instead of just spending money on the guys that you know are proven workhorses.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you there. And the only other thing I had on the bullpen was I pray to God that they do not just run a combination of Liam Hendricks and Justin Slayton as a closer.
Slayton, there's another one that I missed that is a good.
Oh, he's been good. Yeah.
Good example of finding a guy, which I think he was a Rule 5 selection technically, but it was, I forget the order that it was in. He was either selected by the Rangers from the Mets.
Oh.
I think he was selected by the Mets from the Rangers, and then they had to trade with the Mets to get Slayton.
Okay.
Which I do like that they had enough conviction in this guy in the Rule 5 draft to be like, oh shit, somebody picked him before us. Like, we got to make a trade for this guy stat.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was really good. He kind of just spawned out of nowhere. Like, I didn't know any of that lore, and he kind of just showed up. And we'll see. Like, he could take a big step forward this year. He was already better than anyone could have expected last year.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, yeah, anything else on the bullpen?
No, they just have to find a lefty.
Yeah.
It can be Tanner Scott. It can be whoever.
Yeah.
But you can't just run Brennan Bernardino into the ground to
Please
the point
God.
Where you have to trot out. Like, nothing against Cam Boozer. Like I said, he got absolutely screwed by the league for getting suspended for smoking weed and 2016 or whatever it was. Like, what are we doing here with that? But it's like Bailey Horn. I never want to see Bailey Horn in a Red Sox uniform ever again.
No,
scratch that.
Not.
I can see him in a Worcester Red Sox uniform.
That's fine.
Boston Red Sox, no thanks.
No, absolutely not. And then two quick things we have on potential tradable pieces, but I kind of hope not, is Yoshida, which we already kind of talked about, so I don't know if we need to spend too much time on this. But what do you got?
Yeah, I'm not trading him. Like I said, you're the Boston Red Sox. He's making $18 million.
Yeah.
$18 million. You're the Boston Red Sox. Oh, he's a platoon bat. He can only DH it. Who cares? You're the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah.
They struck out. Did they strike out the most times in the league last year? Or it was certainly
there.
Top three. It was them, the Mariners, and the A's. If you're in any type of statistical comparison with the Oakland A's last year, who have one good player. I guess Lawrence Butler got going, but
yeah,
they have one good player. And everyone says they strike out too much. Masataka Yoshida, 95th percentile whiff percentage, 97th percentile K rate. Get him out. Like, what are we doing? Not to, I know you're going to touch on this, not to mention the Sasaki stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So the other quick thing I wanted to throw in about Yoshida is, how terrible does this look to other international free agents? If you're like, oh yeah, we signed this guy 2 years ago. We thought he was a lot better than he actually is. And he's not even bad, but he's just not what we want him to be. So we're just going to pay him, but he's not going to play at all. He's just going to kind of travel with the team and do fuck all. I don't really know.
Sightseeing.
Yeah. How does that look to other free agents? Like, you're treating him like shit, dude. You brought him over from Japan. He left his fucking home to come here. And you're treating him like this? I just don't like
not
the
to
message.
Mention, before he wore down, he was like one of the betting favorites yeah. to win Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. Like, I just hate the message that that sends. And I could go on a rant about Tristan Casas. And I don't know why people want to trade this dude.
Yeah, David, it's because he paints his nails.
I saw him doing yoga in the outfield, bro.
You want a guy on your team that paints their nails? What is he? Who does he think he is?
Give me a fucking break, dude.
Yeah, dude. Conveniently, everybody hates Caleb Williams, who also uh-huh. paints his nails. I'm uh-huh. sure that's just, that's a coincidence.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really the only argument here, and how long he took to get back from his injury. But I don't even...
Dude, who cares?
Dude, yeah. Like,
why?
It was lost. The season was lost. Who gives a fuck?
Okay, so what happens? So Tristan Casas rushes back from his injury. Is it his rib injury? Yeah. Rib cartilage injury. So it's not even like a broken bone heals. The cartilage has to heal, which isn't going to be linear. And it's also very uncomfortable to torque your upper body to have enough power to generate the kind of power that Casas does. So, like, what happens? He rushes back from an injury, comes back a little sooner than he should have. And what, he's dog shit for 2 weeks? Like 2 months until he's actually fully healthy, or even worse, he never puts it back together because the cartilage remains torn for the rest of the season. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
And I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here. His value's never been lower, and we talked about an outfield logjam. You could argue there's a middle infield logjam. Granted, nobody's really grabbed hold of that second base position, but between Rafaela, Story, Meyer, Campbell, Grissom, I didn't even mention the guy that they traded Chris Sale for.
Yeah.
You could argue there's a middle infield logjam. You know where there's not a single other player to potentially come up and take
over?
I want to guess.
First base.
And everyone's like, oh, yeah, but he paints his nails. He takes naps in the clubhouse.
He takes too many mental swings, bro.
Like, who cares? The guy has a little bit of personality. Like,
you need
when
that.
When did we turn into the Yankees?
Where it's
like, you have to shave your beard. You can only have mutton chops or a mustache. Mm-hmm. Like, you're the New York Yankees. You wear the pinstripes because the people in this city wear. Like, what happened to, we're going to talk about the comeback.
Yeah.
But, like, whatever happened to Cowboy Up and Don't Let Us Win Tonight? Now we're talking about a guy who's a little eccentric and we're like, get this guy out of here. Not to mention that he's probably your second best hitter. Like, no disrespect to Jaron Duran, but I'll take Tristan Casas over Jaron Duran.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, like you said, he's only going to get better. That's
absolutely.
The biggest thing here is he fits right in with all of these other young guys. I don't know how old he's like 26, maybe. Yeah, probably not even. Let's see. He is 24, dude. Like, some of these prospects who are getting called up this year are not that much younger than that. This is your young core. He's a part of that. Unless you're trying to get like a really good starter. If the White Sox are like, the only way we'll give up Crochet is for Tristan Casas, I'm not doing that. There are a handful of people I would trade for Tristan Casas. Crochet, Castillo, Lizardo. I don't think any of those pitchers are people who I'm pulling that trigger on. Like, Casas is going to be a cornerstone in this lineup for a long time. Also, like Zach said, his value has never been lower. This is not the time to trade him. I don't think there is a time to trade him. But please just stop talking about this. It's stupid. I don't know where it came from other than the fact that he's a little weird. Like, Zach Greinke was like that. Everybody fucking loved him. And MLB is doing marketing with Casas. He was a big, I don't know why, but he was just like a big factor in the All-Star game. He's kind of just like interviewing people for no reason. He also did some stuff with Nesson while he was hurt. A lot of dugout interviews. He did some post-game interviews. That one with Dom Smith, I don't know if you saw that, but it was,
yeah,
it was sweet. Like, that's a guy you want to keep around.
We haven't even seen the Netflix documentary yet.
Right.
I mean, I guess it's more of a show than it is a documentary, but imagine the kind of star that he's going to be in that. I mean, the entire point of them doing this Netflix documentary was to build a more global brand, the same way that we're seeing F1 explode or Last Chance U explode. And you're going to have a guy like Tristan Casas. Like, imagine how many more Tristan Casas jerseys you're going to see all across the country after people watch this documentary and be like, this dude fucking rocks.
Yeah,
and
he's sick.
I've said this over and over and over again. Your hatred of Tristan Casas fuels me.
Yeah.
It only makes me
love him
even harder and
even stronger.
So you people can keep bitching and moaning about how weird he is and we got to get him out of here. Just know that's not doing a goddamn thing for me because I only love him even more.
Yes, I agree. He is one of my favorite players on the team and he better not go anywhere. The other thing that we could get to real quick is the rotation outlook. I guess the biggest question here is, can you bank on Giolito after missing a full year? To me, I don't think so. It's going to be interesting to see if he can bounce back, but you cannot bank on him. Even when he was pitching like 2 years ago.
One good year.
Yeah, and then he was
the White Sox
really
year.
Bad with the Angels and the Guardians. So who knows?
I am worried that that's what they're going to do. He's in his age 30. But I'm completely on the same page as you. You have no idea how he's going to bounce back from Tommy John.
Mm-hmm.
If he comes back and he's solid, you have a really good problem on your hands. But we know that pitching injuries prop up every single season, every single year. So it's not a bad thing to have a bunch of starting pitching depth. And I know I said that I want two starting pitchers. So you could already have guessed that I'm not banking on him at all.
Yeah.
If you're going to trade for Crochet, there needs to be another major signing to pair with him. I'm not just banking on him taking the step forward. They need an innings eater, and Crochet hasn't been that. And Giolito has been that in the past, but I'm not just plopping a 30-year-old coming fresh off Tommy John in and being like, all right, buddy, 200 innings. Like, you're a crazy person if that's what you're doing.
Yeah, like, hey, you're our ace now. By the way, I know you didn't pitch last year and you were dog shit the year before. You're our ace now. They better not fucking do that.
Yeah, and I think the Cutter Crawford and Tanner Houck conversation is pretty interesting. It does seem like one of them might be out the door if Pivetta accepts that qualifying offer.
Which I'm kind of okay with. They probably have decent value. I'd rather move Cutter.
Everybody, that's what I'm on the same page as you there. Cutter Crawford gives up so many home runs.
Can't stand it. Can't stand it.
It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not, like, you're not going to win very many games with a guy who he at one point gave up. He gave up zero home runs in the first month of the season and still either led the league or finished top five in home runs allowed. His home runs per nine at one point was like three over the last 3 months of the season. You can't be giving up three plus home runs per nine innings and being like, oh yeah, this is a guy we can depend on.
Yeah. Okay, real quick. Do we think any top prospect will debut on opening day?
Realistically, probably not. If there are going to be any two, it's going to be Roman Anthony or Christian Campbell, maybe both.
Yeah,
not super comfortable with either of those picks, but it's fun to imagine. I guess it kind of depends on how the offseason shakes out in terms of trades. Do you trade one of Abreu or Duran? That opens the door
for
Anthony to make the opening day roster. They traded Chris Sale, who's going to win the Cy Young in the NL, for Vaughn Grissom. He's going to get every opportunity this spring to win that second base job. They're going to be on their hands and knees pleading with him to win this second base job.
Dude, they're going to be like Eddie Brock in Spider-Man 3
Literally.
Going to the church.
Yeah. I do think there's a chance that we see a Sam Travis, Jackie Bradley Jr., like any number of guys, spring training out of Christian Campbell that just makes it undeniable that he makes that opening day roster.
Sam Travis is a name.
Oh yeah,
holy shit.
let's talk about guys that had good cards in MLB The Show. Oh, yeah. 84 overall, future star Sam Travis, which speaks to, one, how bad the Red Sox farm system was at the time, that Sam Travis was a quote-unquote future star.
Oh, yeah.
But I do think it's possible that he has that, which I guess Sam Travis isn't the greatest example because he didn't even make the team out of his super hot spring. But Christian Campbell isn't anywhere, or I guess Sam Travis wasn't anywhere close to the caliber of player that Christian Campbell is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree on all those points. I would honestly be okay if no one debuted on opening day. The other thing we have real quick is The Comeback on Netflix is a banger. If you haven't watched it yet and you're a Red Sox fan or a baseball fan in general, watch it. It's really good.
I don't know about you. I don't remember any of 2004.
Nope, me neither.
At 5 years old.
Dude, I was two.
So,
yeah.
So, I thought, obviously, I know the story. I've seen 4 days in October and all that stuff. I didn't know anything about them finding a microphone in their clubhouse.
Yeah, I didn't either.
The funniest thing in the whole thing to me was Kevin Millar begging for A-Rod before the deal was done.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it gave a really good insight into everything.
Yeah.
And the Don Zimmer stuff, like, I know Pedro kind of touched on it, but, like, everyone looks at, like, my girlfriend's father. It's like, oh, Pedro's a fucking scumbag. He threw Don Zimmer to the ground. Oh. What the fuck did you want him to do?
Dude, he charged at him like a bull.
You want him to get his ass beat by Don Zimmer? Then everyone would be going, oh, Pedro's a pussy. He got his ass beat by 100-year-old Don Zimmer.
Yeah,
Pedro was nice to Don Zimmer given the circumstances. He was charging at him headfirst, and Pedro kindly escorted him to the ground.
It wasn't even like a hard push.
No, no. He kindly escorted him to the ground.
Yes.
And the pearl clutching from Tim McCarver. Well, oh, can you believe this? Again, this 100-year-old was coming at Pedro looking for the smoke, and he got it.
Yeah. I agree there. And also, if you haven't watched it, just do yourself a favor. It's awesome.
Yeah, really good. Definitely 10 out of 10 recommend.
Yeah. Also, just a quick random thought. Do we think any team signs Verlander or Max Scherzer?
I think maybe there's a chance they pull a Rich Hill and sign with a contender midseason.
That would be interesting.
Rich Hill got an MLB trade rumors alert today.
Stop.
He's open to pitching in 2025.
Stop it. It's only going to be for the Red Sox. Like, he's from Milton.
Correct.
He doesn't want to go anywhere anymore. He's like 48.
He did a entire game in the radio booth at the end of the season after he was DFA'd by the Red Sox. Entire game.
If Verlander or Scherzer does that, I think it would be a cool story. Just to finish it off here, how long has this been going for?
Hour and a half.
Hey, before we were talking about this, we were like, we'll probably go for like an hour. This has been fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah. To close it out is... Zach had this idea, so if you want to introduce it.
Yeah, I thought it'd be fun to just do some off-season predictions. Nothing's really happened yet. I assume we're going to have a couple weeks until anything happens, although Passan kind of made the assumption that the Soto market could move pretty quickly.
And that probably opens up everything else.
Absolutely, yeah. I assume he's going to be the first domino to fall as far as position players go. And then some combination of Fried or Burns is going to fall, and the rest of the pitching market's going to open up. We haven't really gotten much of a timeline on the Fried or Burns market.
Yeah.
I believe both of those guys are also Boris guys.
Everybody is.
So, yeah, I think it was Kylie McDaniel's article previewing the offseason.
Uh-huh.
He said that Boris was going to be responsible for like 47% of the deals signed to this offseason, which is insane, especially after he laid an egg last offseason.
It was so bad. He's got to redeem himself.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, he's going to end up signing like a 15-year, $700 million
deal.
Very
rich man.
Yeah, so he's going to redeem himself, I would guess. So, two off-season predictions. One, what is your home run off-season?
Mm-hmm.
I went really pipe dream with mine. And then, two, a more realistic option.
Okay.
So, I'll give my home run option first. You sign Juan Soto for a deal somewhere in the 13 to 15-year range. In around, I assume it's going to be around like $650 million.
Yeah.
A lot of money. I don't think there's another big money signing coming if you get Soto.
Mm-hmm.
I had others, so I'll keep going. Trade for Ryan Helsley. You get a horse in the back end of your bullpen. I mentioned that the connection with Heim, the familiarity with the system.
Yep.
That feels like a logical trade partner.
I would like it a lot.
Two. Roky Sasaki.
Yep.
I said it. I think he's going to ultimately be the best pitcher, the best bang for your buck.
How sick would that be?
Oh, my God. It would be so awesome. Just get a 22-year-old stud and have him under team control for pennies on the dollar for the next 7 years. Seven, I think it is.
Okay.
So
that would be sweet.
I talked about needing two starting pitchers. Mm-hmm. Sasaki, I think, can come in. He's just your plug-and-play number one guy.
Yep.
You need a workhorse veteran. Income, a guy that I said I love, Nathan Eovaldi.
Bring him home.
Familiarity with the system, familiarity with the team, the city, knows what it takes to win, has had sustained success since he left here. And there was interest in bringing him back a couple years ago where he ultimately played himself by turning down the Red Sox offer, realizing there wasn't more money out there. And then by the time that he had realized that, he came back to the Red Sox and said, I'm ready to sign. And I forget who it was that they had already signed, but they had allocated that money elsewhere and said that that money's no longer on the table.
I don't remember, but he won a chip. So
yeah, whatever. It's hard to complain.
Yeah, he's probably doing fine.
You signed Tanner Scott.
Yep.
That gives you a second workhorse, left-handed workhorse in the back of your bullpen. Mm-hmm. Your bullpen then looks like Helsley, Tanner Scott, Liam Hendricks, Justin Slayton. Before we even mention Chris Martin, Boozer, any Luis Guerrero, any of the other back-end guys, that's a really good bullpen there. Yeah. And theoretically, that would open up room for another trade, whether that be an outfielder, whether that be a starting pitcher like Houck or Crawford.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can really think of that jumps out to me, but I mean, we're talking about a home run offseason. If that's the offseason, even without making that trade, fire up the duck boats, because it's going to be them and the Dodgers as the two favorites to win the World Series.
With that.
You want to give your home run?
Sure. Okay. Kind of similar. Obviously, sign Juan Soto. That would be just sweet. I would buy a jersey so fast. Also, trade Willier and a package of prospects for Garrett Crochet. I think it's a super interesting idea to have a guy. He never pitched in the minors. He came right from college.
Came from Tennessee. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just such a cool concept to me. He's super young still. You could also probably get him to sign an extension. I mean, I would hope if you're trading for him, you have some sort
that
of guarantee.
Has to be part of the, yeah.
And also, he's just a lefty. I like that. He's got wipeout stuff. Also, I think you could probably still have enough to trade for Devin Williams. To me,
I would assume so, yeah.
To me, between Helsley and Devin Williams, it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other. Mm-hmm. They kind of just give you different things. Devin Williams is more of a finesse guy just because of his wipeout off-speed stuff.
Yeah.
And Helsley will just kind of blow it right by you. To me, I think Devin Williams is kind of a better complement in the bullpen. And also just sign Max Fried. You need a front-of-the-line guy. Also gives Garrett Crochet a little bit more of a leash there. So we'll see. I think that would be sweet. Do I think any of that will happen? Maybe one of them. Probably not anywhere close to all of them.
No. It feels like they're going to get one frontline starter and plug in Giolito and run back the same thing plus one guy.
Oh, God.
What do you got for your realistic?
Okay, so my realistic is I do think they will sign Max Fried. It seems like they're linked to him a lot. Also,
there's been a lot of smoke around him. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I think him and Giolito were teammates. So I don't know if that helps at all.
Yeah.
In, like,
he,
high school, wasn't it with Bauer too?
Flaherty.
Oh,
and,
Flaherty.
Like, Cody Bellinger, I believe.
Yeah.
And, like, they
Bauer.
All like they all hang out. Fuck Trevor Bauer. While we're on that.
Yeah.
But,
yep.
Yeah. Go fucking throw an immaculate inning in the Mexican League against 70-year-old Robinson Cano, you
with
fucking
your,
loser.
With your vlog camera.
Yeah, and your girlfriend/agent, which
ooh, yeah,
is
that's a whole,
definitely a violation.
That's a can of worms that we do not have time for.
Yeah, fuck that guy. If you want the Red Sox to sign him, fuck you too.
Yeah. Also, I think it's kind of a given at this point that we need a closer. Tanner Scott is at the top of my list. I also do think a trade is sort of imminent.
Yeah.
So I just put trade for Crochet/Williams/Helsley because I don't really care who, but just get some of these prospects out of here and trade for someone good. And then also I want to sign a veteran right-handed bat. I don't really know who that is, but pretty much anyone that can just be on your bench, be a sort of platoon guy, a little bit more depth there, and maybe you can flip him at the deadline. That would be cool.
Alrighty, I also agree. I like Max Fried. It seems like there's a lot of smoke around him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a 200-inning guy. I have trading for Ryan Helsley.
Yeah.
I know I had that in my home run, too. I think that is realistic because of the Heim connection. I'm okay with them re-signing Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah.
The second the season ended, O'Neill told Rob Bradford that I'd love to be back. I love it here, and I have already expressed my interest in returning.
I like
to
that.
Craig Breslow, and it seems like the interest was at least semi-mutual between him and the team.
Mm-hmm.
He has already proven he can hit at Fenway.
Yeah.
He stayed healthy for the most part, besides that weird like leg infection thing.
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Which kind of just snuck up
on
out everybody.
For a little while because of that.
Yeah, it was like a week or two, and everyone was like, "Oh, what's going on with Tyler O'Neill?" And Coors was like, "Oh yeah, he's in the hospital with a leg infection." I was like, "Wait, what?"
I thought it was like the Venom symbiote. I don't know what's going on.
It was he was out with like a cramp or something, and then all of a sudden had a leg infection, which was really weird.
Eh, he bounced back.
I want them to sign Tanner Scott.
Yeah.
And then I'd like to see a trade for a controllable starter.
Yeah.
Whether that be Lizardo, whether that be Crochet. It seems like it might be Crochet given
a lot
the
of
smoke
around that.
Yeah. They love Willier, which clears up your outfield log jam.
Obviously,
you're re-signing Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah.
But I'm not counting that as a guy that's going to go out there and play 162 games for you because he's never done that before in his career. So that clears up a spot in the outfield for Roman Anthony, Rafaela, however you want to use that spot in the outfield.
Yeah.
I'm less high on like an Edward Cabrera who doesn't have the track record of some of these other guys. Like I think George Kirby would be a home run. That doesn't feel likely. Gilbert doesn't feel likely. Like even if it's just Luis Castillo, I'm happy with that.
Yeah,
and
that's fine.
I'm sure there's going to be plenty of other names that pop up as potential trade targets as the offseason rolls on.
Yeah.
Like obviously we got that big pass in primer that gave me Helsley, which I didn't know was available, and some other names that don't come to mind right now.
Yeah.
So I'm sure as the offseason rolls on and teams start to explore what they want to do with their rosters, there will be a guy that pops available that none of us have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there is a trade coming for a starter. I'll be pretty disappointed if it doesn't follow that like general outline of an offseason. Obviously, the names are different, and like these are just my preferences and your preferences. Like, who knows what the team views these players? But I think that's a good outline for like the areas of improvement that the team needs to address.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't really have anything more to add. Do you have anything?
Follow us on Twitter.
Yes. Plug your Twitter right now.
I guess X. So you can follow me on Twitter at @co_Zach, @co_Zach with an H, or you can find me on Instagram at @ZachCoSports.
Yeah. Okay. Get on that. And also, if you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, it is DAZER27. Thanks for listening to the inaugural episode. This was a ton of fun.
40 minutes longer than we were expecting it
to be. Yeah, that's kind of how it be with the baseball talk. And I don't know exactly when we'll see you next, but, you know, keep an eye on the feed, and thanks for listening.